Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel of VSiN will join us. We'll talk some summer league, some college football, some NFL, maybe talk some Olympics basketball. I know he's got some long shot bets, not only in the summer league, but in the Olympics in terms of the basketball. So excited to talk to JVT. I'll start with some baseball here, taping this as the games are going on Thursday. And I spent a lot of time on the Yankees and Orioles. Going to spend some time on the National League because I think that's a big story. But we do have a big series this weekend, Yankees and Orioles. Yankees only two out heading into Thursday, three in the loss column. Orioles haven't really put them away in this rough stretch where it felt like at times the Yankees could pull away and put the Orioles at arm's length, six, seven, eight game lead with how well the Yankees were playing. That didn't happen. And now you turn that around, and with how poorly the Yankees have played the last two, 3 weeks, it feels like the Orioles maybe had a chance to run and hide in this division. So big game this weekend. Spent a lot of time on Yankees and Orioles. Cole will pitch Friday night in Yankee Stadium. TBD for the Orioles. So Cole has not looked like Cole of last year. 6.75 ERA. And a lot of that was one game against the Mets where he just didn't have it. He's been okay in the other games. He's been good. He hasn't been great. If you take out the Mets game, which, look, it's four games. You can't just throw out one game. But maybe you figure, hey, we're home. We got Cole. If you can win that game and figure out a split maybe the next two, and or hey, you start to get greedy and think, hey, this is where we turn around if you're the Yankees. That's at least how you're thinking. But Yankees have a big test because the Orioles have really played well against them. 5-2 this season, the Orioles are against the Yankees. And this is a series where if things hold and it's two going into the weekend and Baltimore wins all three and it's five, or Yankees can win all three and they take the lead, something like that, where, I mean, chances are one of them is going to win two out of three, but a big weekend, a big series. So that's the American League. We'll keep an eye on that. We spent a lot of time on that, but I want to spend some time on the National League because I think, I don't know if enough is being made of how beat up the Dodgers are with this Dodgers Phillies series taking place this week. And again, that game is being played right now. Phillies won the first two. This Dodger pitching, I mean, look at the pitchers they have hurt. And Glasnow, Yamamoto, Bobby Miller, who's now in the minors and clearly not the same. Walker Buehler, who might be just shot. Tony Gonsolin, who made the All-Star team a couple years ago. It's not even counting Ohtani, who as a pitcher is hurt. Obviously, he can still hit. They're all sorts of beat up. Kershaw, I don't think I mentioned, by the way, just first ballot Hall of Fame, one of the best pitchers ever. I know he's not that anymore. They have like eight or nine guys. Their pitching stinks right now. Landon Knack and Yarbrough and all these rookies you never heard of. They are really piecing it together. Now they're going to win the division just because they're so overwhelmed with talent, and they'll get some of these guys back eventually. I think it's almost like they gotta have like 15 starters and hope that five are healthy and three or four you can slot in the playoffs. It's amazing. You got to figure it's something in the training, something in the mechanics where all of these guys get hurt. It can't be a coincidence. I know there's a lot of pitching injuries, but to me the Phillies are clearly the favorite to come out of the National League. That's nothing groundbreaking. It's just it's a great lineup. They've got good starting pitching. It's not a perfect team. Are they great at the back end of the bullpen? Look, you can always quibble with some of the things, but they are a really good team. I thought they were going to make the World Series last year. They're up 2-0 on Arizona. They're up 3-2 going home to Philly. I'm still shocked they lost to Arizona those last two games like they did, but they do have a home field that matters, even though last year it didn't. And really last year, they're up 2-0 on Arizona, and they led in game three and game four, let them both get away, won game five. Just shocking the way they let that series get away. But they, to me, are their clear favorite. Now, the Dodgers are going to look different in a couple weeks, a month or so, where they're going to trade for somebody. You think at the deadline, they're always going to trade for somebody, and they're going to get some of these guys back. But right now, you have to take into account, hey, it's baseball, it's small sample, postseason, anything can happen in this new format. The Phillies look like they're in good shape. They are a clear, clear favorite to come out of the National League. The other story is Skeens. Skeens is now 12-1 in some book, 12-1 at FanDuel, 14-1 at DraftKings. He was 100-1 like 10 days ago. I believe I mentioned that one of these shows, either on this podcast or one of the other ones. It might have been, it was on a Saturday where he pitched a couple weeks ago where there was a big movement. I was thinking, you know what, 100-1 is worthy. I still think he's going to win. Sale and Wheeler are both slightly over plus money, and give credit to Jason Weingarten. He was on this podcast February, March, when we were doing baseball previews, and said, hey, Sale at 40, 50-1 is not a bad bet. He did recommend that. So, hey, that doesn't mean it's going to win. He could still get hurt at any time. He could still get beat by Wheeler, but that's a bet you'd obviously want to have in your pocket. And Wheeler says he's going to make his next start, but he's dealing with, a back issue where he came out of the game early. So Skeens is at least in the mix for the Cy Young. You could say, hey, they're going to shut him down. The team isn't good enough. He's a rookie. There's plenty of reasons why he can't win, and I don't think I bet it at 12-1. But my goodness, this kid is a phenom. Seven no-hit innings. He the pitch count got him at 99 pitches. They weren't going to force him for the eighth. They do win the game 1-0. The team's not good around him, can't hit. But, Keller's not a bad pitcher. If he can get Jared Jones back, if that team could ever make a run for the playoffs, they'd be dangerous in the playoffs because that is really good pitching. And Skeens, I would say, as good as advertised. He's better than advertised. I mean, what took him so long to call him up? I know they're probably trying to manipulate the rookie window or whatever, and they really played it slow with him. But my goodness, he is absolutely incredible. He's going to pitch in the All-Star game. I don't know if they're going to start him in the All-Star game, but in terms of buzz and excitement, that would be fun as we head into the All-Star break here this weekend. And then Monday, the Home Run Derby, Tuesday, the All-Star game. I still like the All-Star game. I wish they would wear their uniforms in the game, the team uniforms. I think that makes it more fun, just more visually appealing. But I do still like the All-Star game. And we'll see if Skeens, I don't think they'll start just because he's a rookie. And he'd probably give it. Well, it's interesting. If Wheeler and Sale pitch this weekend, maybe you do give it to Skeens. We'll see. But Skeens is very live for the order. Again, I don't know if I'd bet it at 12-1, at 14-1. That's one where you probably missed the window and there are a lot of things working against him, but he has really made a statement and he is absolutely in the mix to win this award. If you pitch like this the rest of the way, and this is an unsustainable pace, I would expect, but hey, 6-7 shutout innings with 10 Ks, pretty much every start, 8 Ks, 10 Ks, one run, no runs. It's hard not to give it to him, especially if these pitchers start to get hurt, keep getting hurt. Sale's injury prone. He's been fine so far, but who knows? Wheeler's dealing with a back, seems fine, but who knows? Glasnow just got hurt. So again, I wouldn't recommend it now, but absolutely you have to consider. And he is a major story as he's going to be a star for a long time, as long as he can stay healthy. So that's the baseball. We'll talk some summer league, some NFL, some college football, some Olympics, a little bit of everything next with Jonathan Von Tobel. That is next. This is a Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. And he is back. Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN Primetime. He joins us now. JVT, what's up, man? How's your summer going?
It's going good. I just got back from vacation, so it was nice. Spent some time out in California, gotten some sun. I'm really trying to embrace this summer, you know what I mean? So shaved head, losing weight, getting tan, trying to do the whole thing, you know?
That's the other thing, too. I just mentioned, yeah, we got a little haircut. You do look thinner, too. How much weight have you lost?
I think I'm about 32, 33 wow. pounds, something like that. Yeah, so it has been quite the journey. I've been trying to earlier today, I put on the sauna suit, and I went out for about a 2-mile walk. In the heat. So you've been trying to do everything, trying to best Dustin, who is out on vacation and hopefully piling in the gumbo and whatever else you eat out in Georgia. I don't know what the delicacy is.
Yes. Dustin Sweetelson, who is your coworker, our coworker. He's been on this podcast before. JVT and Dustin have a little weight loss competition. So I think just by looking at you, you're the favorite right now, but let's start here. I guess we'll start with Summer League. You're good at dissecting these rosters. You did a deep dive on these rosters. There are future odds up, which I think is fascinating, and this league has come a long way. The quality of basketball is not always great, but hey, look, we can bet on it. And Utah and Golden State are the short shots at 7-1-ish, Grizzlies 9-1, and then you go all the way down to New Orleans, who's 150-1. Is there any value on any of these teams?
Yeah, so I think it's fair to start, too, with what I kind of look for in some of these teams, right, which is I have three criteria that I generally look to evaluate rosters for. And it's the first and foremost, I think the most important criteria is second year, third year guys who have played in NBA games. You know, there is such a difference in playing in NBA regular season action, postseason action, and then playing in these summer league games. Everything's slower. The competition level is a lot lower. And so these guys tend to dominate. And a couple examples, Quentin Grimes, a couple of years ago, led the Knicks to a title game. That was one of the futures that I had. They lost to the Portland Trailblazers. They had Trenton Watford on that squad, a second-year player, both guys averaging about 17 minutes a game in about 40 games prior year. Last year, we saw plenty of examples of that for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Mobley and, of course, Sam Merrill. Merrill had played 60 games prior to that. So those are the things you're looking for. So with that in mind, it's why you see a team like Utah floating at the top at 7-1, because on their roster, Will, they get this. This is the crazy part when you look at Utah's summer league roster. As of now, we have, in terms of second-year guys, Keontae George, Taylor Hendricks. You have Keyshawn Justice on there. We saw who's the big center that I'm blanking on? Walker Kessler. It's right there in front of me. Walker Kessler in the summer league as well. And those guys will play a ton of NBA games. So if they continue to play, because there's a chance that they don't play the entirety, the whole, they deserve to be favored. So that Utah was a roster that really stuck out to me. Memphis actually opened up at 18-1 at one shop to win this thing. It's 9-1 over at DraftKings and other spots. Memphis roster is awesome. because you look at what they bring to the table too. You're talking about guys like Gigi Jackson, Jake LaRavia, Scottie Pippen Jr., Zach Edey. And that's another part of what I'm looking for the characteristics of a team that can be successful in summer league. Guys like Zach Edey, veteran college players making their way to the NBA, who have those matured bodies, who have played a lot of basketball. They'll be ready for competition like this. You saw Edey early in summer league action out there in Salt Lake City, performed really well. But when you have a lead guy like Gigi Jackson, measures in at 6'9", as a scorer, played a ton of games for him last year, those to me were the top two rosters in my mind, were Utah and Memphis. And I do like Golden State. The problem is you have Gui Santos, you've got Brandon Pajemski, you've got Trace Jackson Davis. Two of those guys played at the play-in game for them last year, and they're going to be key role players for them next year. I would venture a guess that they're only on the roster to get practice time and that they're not going to play a lot in the summer league, which is why I kept them off. But Memphis and Utah are two teams that I think are very much worth looking at.
Anything where like the number's just wrong, I feel like there's so much randomness in this where, I mean, these are basically like televised pickup games where, I don't know, are any of these 50, 60, 70 to ones worth a shot, or all these are just properly priced and it's dead money basically?
No, I think I'm trying to see here on DraftKings. Let me search it real quick because I'm blind and I can't see through everything. Like Toronto, I would say, is probably one that is kind of off, right, and somewhat wrong. You know, again, when you talk about the openers, these rides so cool too, Summer League, by the way, because your evaluation of these rosters is just subjective. You know, there's no real measurement of these groups. So, for example, DraftKings has Toronto at 25-1. They were, I think, single digits at Caesars when they originally opened up, and I would be more in this line of what Caesar opened up, which is in that single-digit range. Toronto's got a lot of good veteran play on their roster, right? Ocheck Baji is part of their Summer League roster. You have Grady Dick that is part of the Summer League roster. Javon Freeman Liberty might not be a name that people recognize, but he played quite a few games for Toronto down the stretch this last year. Last season, he played for Chicago on the Summer League squad. He averaged about 19 points per game in Summer League play here in Las Vegas and played all five games for Chicago. So this is a dude that has played NBA regular season minutes, dominated in the Summer League setting already, and now he's going to come back here. And you've got some pretty good veteran talent in terms of some of the rookies coming in. Jamal Shedd, Drew Timmy, Jacoby Walter. These are guys who I think are going to be pretty good active players. So when you look at a roster like Toronto and then see like a 25-1, to me, those two things don't jive because Toronto has a lot of the different types of players that would generally succeed in a setting like this that we've seen in the past.
Who the hell is on New Orleans that they're 150-1?
You know, I haven't seen an officially announced Summer League roster yet. So I think that sometimes what you'll see, especially with teams like New Orleans, the Knicks are doing this too, where you'll get like a team that fancies itself a contender that doesn't have a lot of young guys. Well, they'll just sign a bunch of like rookies and or second year dudes and just be like, let's just roll these guys out there because we need to have a team out there in Las Vegas. And it's not really guys that they have a stake in drafting or developing or anything like that. So I think it's generally what you're going to see from the Pelicans. I haven't checked today. I checked last yesterday, so I haven't seen their roster as a whole. But I would venture a guess because they're one of the last few rosters that has yet to be officially announced. Milwaukee as well, as I mentioned, the Knicks. That's going to be a bunch of rookies or like second, third year dudes. And when I say second or third year dudes, like playing overseas or whatever, that are just getting a shot to play in front of NBA talent and to see what happens.
Do you bet a lot of this game to game?
I don't. It's got to be really good. Like, so I told this story the other day. So last summer, Kelly Bidlin, who is a numbers game producer, and I were sitting at the Thomas and Mack Center, and we were watching Pistons and Raptors, right? And the Pistons last season had one of the better summer league rosters. They had Jaden Ivey, they had Jalen Duren, they had James Wiseman. Marcus Sasser, of course, is on that roster. They were one of the short shots to win the whole thing, and they were very highly rated. So they were about 7.5-point favorites against Toronto, and we're sitting in the stands, and it's about the second or third game. There's the third game. And we're watching them warm up, and I'm like, hey, Jaden Ivey's not out there. Like, James Wiseman's not out there. Duren's not out there. And I don't even mean, like, warming up. They weren't even on the bench. They had gone home. So, like, I go down to the floor because I had my pass, and I was kind of looking around. I'm like, yeah, these dudes aren't even in the building. So we went in. We bet Toronto +7.5. Now, Toronto lost, but they ended up covering with relative ease. But I think that story is pretty much a microcosm of what you're talking about, which is you need to have the information, right? You need to be on top of what players are playing, when and if they are playing, what the roles are going to be. And it's not like preseason, you know, to take people behind the scenes. In the NFL, you still have press conferences every single week, right? You talk to these coaches and whatnot. Press conferences at Summer League, dude, are in the bowels of the Thomas Mack Center where you get just a couple of beat writers who just go and like float around and wait for the guy to come out so they can talk to him. There's not that much information readily available. So I won't go game to game unless I get some information that I know that number's off because player X is not available. So it's all information based. I'd be hard pressed to do it really consistently throughout the entirety. That's why I like to bet the futures instead.
just the regular season futures and awards are starting to pop up. Just any takeaways from those? We're starting to see MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, made a lot of news and a lot of noise because Wembanyama's minus 250. They're basically saying, hey, thanks, but no thanks. Don't bet this year. Most Improved is up at some books. Anything from NBA offseason or awards that catches your eye that's worth tying up your money for, I don't know, 11 months here?
Yeah, I'd say first off, I can't wait to see what other books hang for Defensive Player of the Year, because we've only seen one shop do it. And I think you're exactly right, which is one shop is like, we want no part of this. We, you know what, it's a biblical reference, Pontius Pilate, right? We wash our hands of this market. You guys go bet anything else, but you will not find a good price on Victor Wembanyama at this shop. So I think it's cop out, but whatever. As far as everything else is concerned, Rookie of the Year is the only one I've really dove into. And I'll give you a couple that I think stick out to me. You know, Cody Williams has not had the best start to his summer league play out there in Salt Lake City for the Utah Jazz. But I think the run is going to be there for him in terms of minutes and games. He's going to get the opportunity to play for Utah. Larry Markkanen might be gone. He's going to be a trade candidate. Golden State sniffing around. Other teams are trying to get him. Oklahoma City. This might be a team that they just turn over to the youngsters by the time we get to freaking January. And Cody Williams is going to be one of those guys. So I think at 22-1, when you're talking about a 6'8" wing player who's going to have the ball in his hands, who can stuff the stat sheet, I think he's definitely worth looking at in that regard. And then going a little bit deeper, if you wanted to look around, one of the names that I think sticks out because the Minnesota Timberwolves really wanted him is Rob Dillingham, who they got in that trade with the San Antonio Spurs. They need a scoring guard desperately, and they need him off of the bench. And I think Dillingham is going to be that guy that they expect to be. And I think they're going to let him work things out and work through those bumps and bruises, similar to Denver last year, right, where they had a bunch of young guys that they needed to play bigger roles. So they let them have bigger roles in the regular season. So then when they get to the postseason, they'll be ready to go. I think it's going to be a similar situation there for Minnesota. You're going to want to save Mike Conley for the postseason. You're going to want to save some of your guys. How do you do that? You put most of the mileage on the young dude that you're developing, and I think Dillingham's going to have a pretty good opportunity to do it.
College football, anything you've bet yet? I know you're big Mountain West. You're big into that. I think you did some write-ups on that. I'll ask it this way. I've been asking this of other guests. One team you think is overrated, one team you think is underrated based on the market right now.
Yeah. So I think for me in the Mountain West, I'm writing our Mountain West preview and our Big 12 preview. So I'm getting into both of these conferences. And when it comes to the Mountain West specifically, I would say that I think a team that is somewhat overrated in the Mountain West is Fresno State. You're floating around like plus 280, 3-1. I understand the allure of what Fresno State can be. Mikey Keene comes back. You've got 13 guys coming back in total, 8 of them on offense. But on defense, you're kind of rebuilding quite a bit. You know, along your defensive line, you've lost 3 starters. You're kind of rebuilding your linebacking core. You missed your best corner. He's out too. He's a first-team all-conference player. And your schedule, I think, is somewhat challenging when you're looking at some of the opportunities, some of the games that you're going to have to play when it gets to the conference. So I think that at the very least, when you're talking about like plus 280, second best team in the conference, for my money, it's UNLV. I think when you look at what the Rebels bring back, the one of the best cover teams in the country last season, and a lot of people might balk at the fact that your quarterback room is 2 FCS transfers. But these are 2 guys in Matt Saluka and Haj Malik Williams who fit their go-go offense much better than what Jaden Maiava, who was their starter last year, does. So you have a better start there. You got a third-team All-American, a wide receiver in Ricky White. You got Jacob DeJesus, who was a third-team All-American special teams player on this offense that's playing wide receiver too. Your offensive line brings 3.5 starters back, we'll call it, up front. And then on defense, you've got about 6 guys coming back, but you've got a really great defensive mind in Barry Odom, who has really changed things around. And your secondary brings back quite a few guys too. And you have your best player at linebacker. I think the Rebels are the second best team in the Mountain West. And I think that they should be a team that, from an odds perspective, they've dipped to like 6-1, deserve a little bit more credit. And schedule-wise too, Will, the good thing for them, they get Boise State, but they get them at home. And their road games, Utah State, which is a mess, that just fired their head coach, Hawaii, which they should be able to beat. Hawaii's bringing back a bunch of guys, might be a little bit tough, but still a rate much better than them. And then San Jose State, who's completely rebuilding and bringing Ken Nuantamolo back, and or should be into the fold and trying to rebuild that. Their schedule's really easy. So I think when you look at UNLV, they're in a really prime position. They should be a little bit higher than 6-1. And I'll give you one last long shot in the Mountain West. Wyoming is moving on from Craig Bull. He's retiring, right? He's moving on. That roster is, I think, low-key kind of loaded. When you look at who's coming back for the Cowboys, a 9-win team, they bring back 13 dudes, 6 of them on offense, 7 on defense. Their offensive line returns mostly intact, 4 of their 5 guys. They have their top 3 rushers back as well. This defense brings pretty much everybody back, including that defensive line. Only one guy leaves. It's all intact there. Both safeties come back. Like, I really think that Wyoming, who last year surprised a lot of people at about 13-14-1, you could do a lot worse. And you get the key games at home. You get Air Force at home. You get Boise State at home. And on the road again, similarly, you only go to San Jose State, New Mexico, and Colorado State. CSU might be tricky, but watch out for Wyoming.
Yeah, and I don't know how much you've started Big 12, but man, super, and I've just started to, do some prep on these. Super balanced conference, super just, I guess, condensed is the right word, where the favorite, and you could just pick like 6 to 8 teams. I know Utah's the favorite, but man, there's like 6 or 8 teams that you can all make a case for winning. Is that kind of how you feel?
Yeah, I would agree. I think, I keep saying, I would agree with the market where the dotted line, if you will, is right around that TCU mark, right? It's TCU's in the range of like 18 to 1. You don't even look like TCU. TCU, Will, brings about 17 guys back, depending on how you rate starters. Most of them come back on defense. Hoover's a kid, a quarterback, who showed some real growth once he got the starting job as you move forward in that offense, which is always going to raise the floor of your quarterback. You go that deep in this conference, and you just look at some of these teams. West Virginia, Iowa State, Arizona, Oklahoma State. These are all teams that bring back double-digit starters and like high double digits. We're talking about near 20s for a lot of these teams. So I would agree with you, but I'll say this. I think the one team that I've really come around on and actually made a really long shot wager on their quarterback to win Heisman is Iowa State. Iowa State's got 19 guys coming back. Their schedule is really, really manageable. They get the two big dogs, Utah and Kansas State, the last 2 weeks of the regular season. The other challenging spots, the mostly, are going to be like Baylor, West Virginia. It's going to be a schedule that I think really works for them. And you could be looking at an Iowa State team going the last 2 weeks of the season that realistically is sitting on 1 or 2 losses, and they could win those 2 games. So when you look at that and the fact that if they get a key win over Iowa in the early portion of the season, Rocco Becht, who in the last 5 weeks of the regular season, 4th highest rated passer in the Big 12, 10 touchdowns to 2 interceptions, showed a lot of life. These skill positions look really talented. He was 1,000 to 1 to win Heisman over at Circa. So I took a little bit of a shot at that because I was like, you know what? There's a potential he's a starting quarterback for a 10-win team that could win a conference to go to the playoff. There's a lot worse bets to make, I think.
I might have to tail that just because, hey, what's the line from The Office? Anything at 1,000 or somebody gives 10,000 to 1 odds on anything,
you take it.
It's funny. I had Bear on Monday and I asked him the same thing, overrated, underrated. He picked Iowa State as his underrated team.
Yeah. There's a lot to like about him, man. Like they bring back a ton. And if Becht is going to be good, right? Like, I think that's going to be something where you look at this conference and it always cannibalizes itself, but you even look at the top, right? Like I get it, Cam Rising's a million years old, but the offensive line is not intact. It's being rebuilt, and he was oft injured. K-State looks like it's got a lot, but their returning production is at running back. Their offensive line is getting rebuilt, and you have a true sophomore quarterback. Anything could happen there. And then you get to the other side where Oklahoma State, that was one of the worst defenses in the country in key categories. So what if that turns out? And by the way, Alan Bowman can't stop committing turnover-worthy plays. He puts the ball in danger a ton. I could poke holes in all these teams. UCF was one of the, I think they were 125th against the run by EPA standards last year. It's not getting any better. So you just kind of go down the list. Jalen Daniels, is he going to play more than 4 games for Kansas? So I think when you kind of start to poke holes and really look at the Big 12, Iowa State at either 10-1 to win the conference and doing some other stuff with the Cyclones, it makes a lot of sense to me.
You had anything lately in NFL?
No, I think the NFL I've really kind of held back on. The one thing that I did, I don't know if I talked to you about this, was Anthony Richardson to an offensive player of the year for the Indianapolis Colts. He's floating around 40-1. UNLV's own Shane Steichen, head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. I believe in him, man. Like what he did with Gardner Minshew in that offense last year to be a dropped pass away from the postseason was very impressive. And I think that barring health, and that's a little bit of a concern, right? Because they were at OTAs and he was a little dinged up and they say he's going to be ready for training camp. But if he can stay healthy, the ability of Anthony Richardson is off the charts. And in that offense, you can see him adding it on the ground, doing it through the air, scoring a ton of touchdowns, and having a team that looks really, really solid in a lot of different positions in the playoffs. And he would be a really big part of that at about 40-1 to win it. I think that there's worse bets to make out there too. So I took a little piece of him just to have something to root for the Colts.
All right. I wasn't expecting that one. That's not bad. Offensive player of the year is a weird one where I went back and looked at it like the last 10 or 15 years. There was like a, I don't know, a 5-6 year stretch. I think 2013, 15, 16, 18, where the quarterback, where the MVP was also the offensive player of the year. But the last 5 years, it's diverted into like best non-quarterback, where it's like best running back or receiver, but who knows? It's so open for interpretation that I don't know. Maybe there is value on some of these quarterbacks. Did I hear you're taking Olympics? Are you betting the Olympics?
Yes. Yeah, I bet France at 14-1 to win gold in basketball.
Oh my goodness, France!
What?
Are you not a big fan of root against the U.S.? This is upset. No, I look.
Not only that, I'm going to root for Rudy Gobert, huh? It gets even worse. I think as they call it, Les Blues. So what's been fascinating, I don't know if you've been tracking this at all. So Victor Wembanyama's on the roster. Rudy Gobert's on the roster. They're playing them together. So, like, you have both of those dudes on the floor just clogging up that space. Wembanyama is a help defender in this regard, so he's going to block a ton of shots. I don't know how you're going to get to the rim on this team at all when you have those two up front. You got Bilal Coulibaly, who's about 6'9", with a massive wingspan. You can play on the wing and play defensively, too. They've got three 40% three-point shooters on the roster. I think when you look at them offensively, their big issue is where are you going to get guard play, because that's one of the big problems. Their starting point guard is really, really small. And actually, he might not even be their starting point guard as we get to the games. But Andrew Albisi is about 5'10", 170, so he's really small. That's going to be a problem. Frank Ntilikina is also a candidate to start a point guard. We know how his offensive game looks, but he's a really good point of attack defender. Then you also have on this roster, Evan Fournier, Nick Batum. These are guys who are respectable shooters and decent defenders who are going to have two guys behind him, and Wembanyama and Gobert, they're going to be awesome. So when you factor all that in, for me, the fact that the format pretty much guarantees that they're going to get to the knockout stage and they have home court because this is in Paris, I thought at 14-1, they were worth it. And I also rate them better than Canada. You know, we're going to watch this later today, but in FIBA basketball, Will, like, you need depth at center and you need size. And the one thing that Canada does not have is reliable size and play at the center position. And that kind of got me off of them. I know they finished third at the FIBA World Cup, but all the rosters around them are much better. Wembanyama didn't play for France at the World Cup last summer. I thought all of that dictated that at 14-1, it was worth it for the home nation.
Boris Diaw still on the French team?
No, he's not. But I think, well, what was the, there was a name that really stuck, like Dusan Ristic is still playing for Serbia. You know, you got some names out there.
Yeah,
that
you
are
get
still
some,
there.
Some blasts from the past. How good is Flag? If you watched or heard about Flag, I know he tore it up, supposedly at practice, the incoming freshman for Duke, who's supposedly going to be the number one pick and just the real deal.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen more than what anybody else saw in all the footage, right? But I'll tell you this, what I watched, what stuck out to me is, you know, usually when you see these kids, I'm expecting Chet Holmgren body, right? Like, Chet Holmgren was just like sticks and limbs and probably like 90 pounds soaking wet coming into Gonzaga. If you look at Flag and you look at him compared to like some of those NBA guys on the floor, he's like a stout dude given his size and the fact that he's only 17. So he's kind of already got some girth to him. That was, to me, the most surprising thing. Generally, you see those teenagers look gawky and weird. He does not look like that at all. He's got really good size and physicality, and he was going up with Bam Adebayo, Anthony Davis, and he was holding his own, and I thought that was really, really impressive.
Yeah, the tanking will be epic this year. Wizards, yes. Bulls, Nets, there will be a handful of teams that that
want a dark horse candidate?
Let me guess who your dark horse candidate's going to be. Dark horse candidate. Huh, let me think here.
Actually, let me double check. Hold on.
Clippers don't have their pick, and that would be mean to say the Clippers. Go ahead, just tell me.
Well, it was going to be the Clippers, actually. I got to double check, though, because they say I don't know if they have their first-round pick for this year, because that's the tough part.
I don't think they do.
Let's see. OKC has the right to swap the 2025 first-round pick. There's a ton of different stuff.
Yeah. None of it's very good. Yeah, is it?
No, it's not. So we'll see if that's going to be the case. But I think that you're right. Ultimately, there's going to be a lot of teams. And there might be some surprising teams, you know, that are sitting there. Like, if you're Golden State, for example, right, you don't get Larry Markkanen. And God forbid Steph Curry gets hurt. But then you're sitting there going, well,
that's how
screw
I got
it.
The second pick a few years ago. Yeah, that's.
Yep.
That's
now, they wasted on James Wiseman. But, like, you know, like, if you're there, you're like, screw it. Let's go do this thing. So I think there's going to be a lot of those where if you get nicked up and all of a sudden you're looking around and going, let's just do this thing, man. Let's just tank this thing out and let's go try to get this kid.
Yeah. Clippers, I mean, I don't even know what they do. If it were me, maybe you get Kawhi healthy and you try to trade him. I know you're not going to get the full Kawhi, return because teams are going to be, you know, they're not going to get the full value just based on his injury history, but you got to get something. You can't just go into this with Kawhi, James Harden at their ages and no picks. That's just, you're asking for disaster.
No, I mean, I think you're right. And like, I think we talked about this today on primetime because we talked about the fact that Kawhi pulled out of the Olympic Games. You know, he's not playing anymore because he's got this sore knee. And I think their floor on defense is actually going to be really high because their defense, I think, is going to be pretty good. You know, you have Kawhi, you got Derek Jones Jr., Terrence Mann's a decent defender. You got good pieces coming off defensively off the bench. So I think defensively they're going to be fine. It's just when Kawhi doesn't play, I don't know where you're getting your shot creation from outside of James Harden. Like, there's not that much on this roster at all when it comes to creating looks on offense. And that could lead to, I think, a pretty rough season. So I don't know what they're going to do, especially if he's not healthy, because he's going to miss time. Like, I've got a better shot of hitting my Rocco-backed 1,000-to-1 Heisman than getting Kawhi Leonard to play 75 games in the season. You know, like, that's not going to happen anymore. So it's going to be really rough to see, because I think they've got some real potential on defense, but their offense could be middle of the pack, if not below, like we're talking like maybe 20th in offensive efficiency, especially in the time that Kawhi misses.
Yeah, season win totals are going to pop up soon. That's what I'm looking at. I'm expecting it to be like 39-40, because I think they were 44.5 last year. You got to dock like 3 wins for George. I just think, look, Kawhi's going to miss 25 or 30 games, and then it's Harden show, and then they're just I just think there's maybe a 10 or 20% chance they trade Kawhi too. And look, a team like the Lakers would get desperate. I don't know if you can make the money work. But, I mean, LeBron, at the end of his career, whatever picks they have, and look, 2 Lakers unprotected picks are pretty valuable picks. So maybe that's a road they can down. Maybe you can find a team that's desperate and get something back.
Yeah, I think that's maybe the best way to go. I mean, who knows, man? Like, I think it's somewhat worrisome, and it's somewhat sad, too. I mean, like, I'm a Clippers fan. I'm also a basketball fan. Pete Kawhi was among some of the best players we've ever seen on both offense and defense. And this dude just cannot get that knee right. And that's the worrisome part, right? It's not like for – I'm a Clipper fan and I will be a defender. As much crap as Paul George gets, when you saw the time that he missed as a Clipper, a lot of it was some bad luck. It was going up for a rebound, a Lou Dort falls into your knee and hyperextends it, right? It's like little things like that. For Kawhi, it's the same issue. It's the knee that tore his ACL, and it's the degenerative quad and all these sort of things. It's a reoccurring issue that looks like it's putting his career in peril. And that's the part that sucks. And that's the part that also waters down the issue with if you're going to get something from him at the end of this 3-year deal that he's now on.
Yep, no doubt. JVT, appreciate it, man. Let everyone know where they can find you.
At me, JVT, up on Twitter. Beeson Prime Time. It's going to be, what am I on, from 6 to 9 Eastern Time. I'm going to be on Follow the Money all next week, and there's some chaos, but you know, we'll be back to regularly scheduled programming in a little bit. And then, Beeson.com. I write up pretty much every single day.
Appreciate the time, man. We'll do this again soon, hopefully.
Yep. Thanks, man. Appreciate it as always.
All right. That will do it. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel. We will be back Monday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you Monday.